I want to thank Rabbi Bixen very much. We have a very warm and long-standing relationship, and it's always a pleasure for me to be able to be here in this community that he has led and continues to lead with such exceptional distinction. I am here together with about 35 rabbinic colleagues from across North America who have gathered here for a Yarche Kala program under the auspices of Yeshiva University. We meet once a year, and we decided to come here, and we thank the rabbi for his graciousness, for providing us with warm weather and with a lot of comforts. And those of us who come from colder climes in particular, welcome the opportunity to be here and to be able to spend time with your rabbi. I would like to discuss an issue that I've been thinking about for a while and invite you to think along with me. The larger question is a question that I first was exposed to really in a serious way when I read the article that is at the top of the bibliography on the first page. Does anybody not have a copy of the handout? So there are extra copies in the back. So if you don't mind just keeping your hands up, so we'll make sure that you have a copy. And I'm going to be working off of the copies. So it's important to have a copy with you. Shalom Aleichem. Hello.
How are you?
Wonderful. And the question is as follows. What do you make of the fact, everybody, what do you make of the fact that the Torah text that we have is a combination? The Torah text that we have is, on the one hand, a book of laws, so you understand that we have Taryag mitzvos, we have 613 mitzvos that are mentioned in the Torah, that are described in the Torah, and there is sometimes a debate and a discussion as to what exactly they are. It's not as if you open up a scroll of the Torah and then there's a little finger or a little asterisk or an underlined in red, this is a mitzvah. But we have a tradition, the Talmud tells us, that there are 613 mitzvos aseh and lo aseh, 365 positive commandments, 248 negative commandments, and they're in the Torah. So the Torah is what we call a code, or the Torah is a law book. The Torah doesn't only have Aseres HaDibros, the Torah has laws. So on the one hand, the Torah is a book of laws. On the other hand, the Torah is a book of stories. The Torah tells a narrative. Bereishis bara Elokim es ha-shamayim ve-es ha-aretz, God creates the world, and then we have Adam and Chava, and then we have Noach, and then we have Avraham, and Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Yosef, and Moshe, and Bnei Yisrael, and Mitzrayim, in Mitzrayim, out of Mitzrayim, in the desert for 40 years, culminating in the conclusion of the 40 years. It's a story. The Torah is a story. And the Torah is a book of laws. And the issue that I would like to work together with you this evening revolves around the fact of how do we understand the confluence of these two, we'll call them genre. There's a narrative genre, a story genre, and there's a legal genre. There is a code. What do we make of the fact that the Torah embeds the mitzvos in the Torah in stories? The Torah does not give us, this is what you should do, this is what you should not do, this is what you should believe, this is what you should not believe. The Torah presents us Taryag mitzvos in the course of presenting stories. So the first issue is general. It's very interesting. It seems to be an overlap or a lack of clear definition. So what is the Torah? Is the Torah stories or is the Torah laws? And the Torah is a combination. What do we make of that? We believe that the Torah is a divine document, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to teach us the laws of the Torah via telling us the stories of the Torah. The second question that relates to that is, in specific instances, why is this particular mitzvah mentioned in the context of this particular story? So first sort of bigadol in general, this whole idea of both of them together. And then once we can understand that in fact the Torah is this kind of a combination, what do we make of the fact that mitzvah X is in the middle of story Y? So let's begin with the very, very first Rashi in Chumash. To understand the first Rashi in Chumash is to understand this complexity that I am presenting to you. The bottom right-hand side of the first page, Bereshis bara Elokim es haShamayim v'esaaretz, the very first pasuk, Bereshis perek aleph pasuk aleph, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Says Rashi, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. It's a question who Rabbi Yitzchak is. Who is Rabbi Yitzchak? Some say that it's what? It's the father of Rashi. The Taz says that it's the father of Rashi. What does Rashi stand for? Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, which is odd because if we wanted to say Rabbi Shlomo, the son of Yitzchak, what would we call him? We would call him Rashbi, like Rambam, Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachmon, Rabbi Shlomo ben Yitzchak. What's the problem? Rashbi was already taken, right? Rashbi is already lifted to the rafters of the, you know, he's retired already. The Rashbi is retired. What is Rashbi? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Second century. We're talking a very, very long time ago. So Rashbi is taken. If you want to say Rabbi Shlomo ben Yitzchak, then we're left with Rashi, and we call Yitzchak Yitzchaki. In fancy academic jargon, Rashi is known as Isaacides. Just like you have Maimonides and Nachmanides, you have Isaacides. And Isaacides means son of Yitzchak. So one suggestion is, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak is a reference to his father, but just so happens that in the Yalkut Shimoni, we actually found a Medrash, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, that has this exact quote. Question, of course, is the Yalkut Shimoni Medrash before Rashi, in which case Rabbi Yitzchak is not Rashi's father, or is the Yalkut Shimoni Medrash, which is the consensus of scholarly opinion after Rashi, in which case it's based on Rashi, in which case Rabbi Yitzchak can very well be the father of Rashi. Be that as it may, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Rashi asks a question. And the only way to understand what this question is if we understand the larger issue that I'm trying to work through with you. Lo haya tzarech lahaschil haTorah, elo mehachodesh hazeh lochem, shehi mitzvah rishona shenetzdavu bo Yisrael. Umatam pasach bevereshis. What's Rashi's question? Or what is Rashi's assumption on which he bases his question? Rashi says that why is it we're starting with Bereshis? Where should the Torah have started? Help me out. With the first mitzvah. Now why should? What's the assumption here that underlies Rashi's question? That the Torah is a law book. If the Torah is a law book, V'stafechum Bereshis, Nayach, Lech Lecha, Vayeir, Chayisara, told us. Vayetze, Vayishlach, Vayeshev, Mikes, Vayigash, Vayechi. Shmos Va'era, till the 12th chapter of Parshas Bo. If it's a law code, so let's start with section A, subsection A, number one. Achedish says Elohim, it's the first mitzvah. So what Rashi bases his question on is an assumption that the Torah is a law code. What's Rashi's answer? Mishom koyach masav higad liyamo loses lohem nachlas goyim, because the pasuk says in Tehillim that God wants us to tell the Gentile world the power of his actions. Sheim yomru umos olam liYisrael, if the Gentiles say to the Jews, listem atem shekivashtim artzo shiva goyim, you are not indigenous to this part of the world, You are usurping somebody else's land. This land doesn't belong to you. It belongs to others who came here before you. Should just theoretically, we don't know what this means, but just like theoretically, if somebody were to say this to the Jewish people, then you will be able to say to them, Haim omrim lahem kol ha'aretz shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whole world belongs to God, who bara'a, God created the world, unasana la'asher yashar ba'enav, he gave it to whoever he wanted to give it to, b'rtzono nasna lahem, first he gave it to them, u'b'rtzono natla mehem, v'nasana lanu, and he gave it to us. So what's Rashi's answer? Rashi's answer is a deeper answer than the simple answer of Rashi. And Rashi's answer is that the Torah is not the way I assumed, what? A code, but the Torah also is a story. And the reason why the Torah is a story is so that should someday somebody come to claim to the Jews and say, what are you doing here? It doesn't belong to you. Get out. So you'll be able to say to them and have some kind of an answer. Now, you understand very well that this answer is, seems to me, not going to be terribly convincing to those who make this claim. So you'll go to your friend Ahmed, who is the Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United Nations, or the Iranian ambassador to the United Nations, or the Jordanian ambassador to the United Nations, or the Lebanese ambassador to the United Nations, you name it, who it is. And you'll say, Achmein, what are you, you're telling me that it's not my land? You're telling me I'm usurping somebody else's land? Excuse me. It's a beferish of Rashi. Rashi says, Koyach Masav Higaliyama, and Ahmed is going to fall Kairim. Oh my God, you're right. Excuse me. It's a beferish of Rashi. It's not for Ahmed. Who's it for? It's for us. That we need to understand that we have a claim. We're not trying to convince, seems to me, Yenim. We're trying to convince ourselves. But what's Rashi teaching us here in the question and the answer? The question and the answer of Rashi, it seems to me, revolve around this very issue. So what is the Torah? Havamin of Rashi, the question is, the Torah is a law code. No, if the Torah is a law code, start a chedesh hazeh lachem. Answer, no. There's something else going on here besides being a legal text. The Torah is a narrative. And because the Torah is a narrative, no. So we found Tzachan from the beginning, Bereishis Bar Elokim, Es HaShamayim Ve'es HaAretz. Now let's take a look. In the case of the Torah, I want to ask three specific questions. So I'm inviting you in general, and I would say that if you keep this in mind throughout the Torah reading, and now we're starting to pick up at the end of Sefer Shmos through Vayikra, we're getting to a lot of mitzvahs. A lot of mitzvahs are now unpacking themselves in the biblical text, to wonder and ask yourself, why is Dafka this mitzvah in this particular case and in this particular place? Why do we embed this halacha, this mitzvah saseh, this mitzvah lo saseh, in this particular narrative? For example, let's pick up where we just left off, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, bottom left, page 1. So Rashi says we should have the Torah beginning with HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. It would appear to me that HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem is Ein Gewurzel, the Mitten Derinin, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense. The whole mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, this is the first month, this month should be for you, Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chad She'ashana, seems to be parachuted into a place that requires explanation. And the way you know, methodologically, if something is parachuted into a place, is very simple. If you take it out, and you put it on the side, and then you read the text, is something missing? Can you tell something is missing? Or, Zageitza Chazay Gishmirt, follows this, follows this, this follows... Nothing's missing. Makes perfect sense. If it makes perfect sense without it, then you have to ask yourself, what is it doing where it is? So, for example, let's take a look. Torah tells us the end of chapter 11 in Sefer Shmos. The Torah tells us that it's now time to take the Jews out of Egypt. We're now holding by Makas Bechoros. Ve'yomer Moshe Ko'amar Hashem, Kachatzos halayla and yotze besoch Mitzrayim umeis kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim. It's time to go. Number 10 of the 10 plagues. We're ready to go. And that's what happens, and there's a big tumult, and everybody is upset in the Egyptian world, and the Jewish people are ready to go. And then Moshe v'Aaron pasuk yud asu es kol ha'movsim o'ele lifnei paro v'yechazek Hashem es leif paro v'lo shilach es b'nei Yisrael me'arzo. End chapter 11. Now we begin chapter 12. V'yomer Hashem el Moshe v'yalar b'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor. And I'm going to now skip pasuk beis. Okay, we're ready to go. Makas b'choros. We're on the cusp of redemption. Dabro kol adas Yisrael le'mor. Ve'asa l'chodesh hazeh v'yikchu lohem ish sela be'sovo sela bayis. It's time to get the sed. The sed is the Egyptian deity. You're going to be able to take it and tie it to your bedpost with impunity. And in a couple of days from now, you're going to shech this. And you're going to leave and you're going to have a korban pesach and we're out of here. That's what follows. That makes sense. We're ready to go. Last of the plagues. Get ready to go in a couple of days. Here's what you got to do to prepare yourself. And everything is fine. In Mitten the Rin and Arangavar from Pasuk Beis. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe ve'alaram be'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor. Hachodesh hazeh lochem rosh chodoshim. Rishon hu lochem lochotshe yashono. Dabro kol adas Yisrael le'mor. What's that doing there? Why is this here? That's my first question. So that's my first question of an example of a question that I hope you'll ask regularly as you look at the Torah readings and as you see how each parsha unfolds, and when you identify a pasuk that's a mitzvah, to ask yourself, why is it here? So my first question is, speaking of Achodesh HaZelochem, the first Rashi in Chumash, why is Achodesh HaZelochem, why is that relevant to be told right now? It means that the Beis Din determines the month, right? So we know how is Shabbos determined. How do we know when Shabbos is? Because Mishesh Yisimei Bereishis, God rested on the seventh day. So every seventh day from the beginning of time is Shabbos. We do Shesh Yisyom Amasa Hashem Shemayim Ve'es Haaretz, and on the seventh day he rested. So that's built in. That's part of the regular rhythm of the year, of our lives. How do we know when Yom Tov is? So Yom Tov is not determined by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yom Tov is determined by Beis Din. So you have to find out when Rosh Chodesh is, and there's a whole process, and a little sliver of the moon, and the witnesses come to court, and the court examines and cross-examines the witnesses, and if the court determines, oh, Taka, this is the new moon, so Megita Klapa from Tish, we make a big announcement, today is Rosh Chodesh. No, today could be Rosh Chodesh, or tomorrow could be Rosh Chodesh. Every month is either 29 days or 30 days. So is the 30th day the first day of the next month? Or is the 31st day the next day of the first day of the next month? And then, once we know what Rosh Chodesh is, you count 15 days. Ah, Sukkot. Ah, Pesach. 10 days. Ah, Yom Kippur. What do we do? Rabbi Finkelstein, come in. What do? We count. There's a sheet in the back. Joel, what do? We count from when the Beis Din decides when Rosh Chodesh was. And it makes a big deal. Can you eat chametz or can you not eat chametz? When are you allowed to eat chametz? When are you not allowed to eat chametz? All of this is determined by Beis Din. That's what Achodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodesh and Rishon Hu Lochem Lochad Sheyashana. Thus Epis Arangavar from Emitin Derinin. Why do you need to tell me this now? Why is this relevant now? We're on a roll. We're out of here. We're leaving Egypt. Go get the seh. Get it ready. In a few days, we're done. Karban Pesach. Yetzias Mitzrayim. Question number one. Question number two on the next page. The mitzvah of challah. The mitzvah of challah is at the end of Parsha Shlach. The mitzvah of challah is at the end of Parsha Shlach. What's happening at the end of Parsha Shlach? So the beginning of Parsha Shlach is the story of the Meraglim. After Parsha Shlach is Parsha's Korach, is the story of Korach. In Mitten Derinin, between the Meraglim and Korach, the Torah tells us on the right-hand side of page 2, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Ches, Bamidbar Tezvov, V'yadabar Shem Moshe Lemar, Dabar al-Bnei Yisroel, V'yomarto al-Lam, B'vo'achem al-Ha'oretz, Asher ani mevi eschem shomo, when you come to the land that I'm going to bring you, v'ayabacholchem ilechem ha'aretz, when you're going to be able to benefit from the bread, from the wheat, from the produce of the land. So you should know, tarimu truma la'ashem, you should set aside a portion to God. Reishis ariso sechem, the first of the kneading that you do in the dough. Chala tarimu truma, ketrumas goren kein tarimu osam, reishis ariso sechem, titnu la'ashem, truma l'doro sechem. You should know, kindalach, that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to give chala. In Mitten the Renin, right between Parshas Meraglim and Parshas Korach. Question, why here? Why is the Mitzvah of Challah right here? Mitzvah of Challah could have been anywhere. Mitzvah of Challah maybe should have been all the way at the end of Sefer Dvarim. How does it begin? Bevoachem el Haaretz. So we're now in Parshas Vezos HaBracha. We're wrapping it up. Moshe Rabbeinu is leaving the stage of history. We're now ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. Kindalach, you should know. In a little while from now, you're going to be on the other side of the river. B'vo'achem al ha'aretz, you should know. I'm giving you fair warning and notice. You're going to have to give challah. V'sepes challah right here at the end of Parsha Shlach. The last of the three questions, and this question could be raised probably 150 times. The last one is the Parsha of Paraduma. The Parsha of Paraduma is at the beginning of Parshas Chukas. We're now on the left side of page 2. Chapter 19 in the book of Numbers, in Bamidbar Yotes, Ve'edam B'Shem Moshe Ve'elaron Lemar, Zos Chukas HaTorah, Ve'yikho Alecha Paraduma Temima Asher En Bamum, the whole Parsha Paraduma, and then you, the ashes of the Paraduma, is Metaher, the Temeim, is Metame, the Tahorim. If you want to become ritually purified, you need the Paraduma. Why is the story of Paraduma right here in chapter 19 of Sefer Bamidbar? It should have been either earlier in Pasha's bow, as they're ready to bring the Korban Pesach. So there may be some Jews who are not ritually pure, so this would be able to help them to purify them. Or maybe it should have been in Vayikra. We're going to soon start the book of Vayikra, and the Vayikra has a lot to do with Tumah and Tahara, with ritual purity, ritual impurity. So when you're talking about ritual purity or ritual impurity, so tell me, how do I solve the problem? How do I resolve my impurity? Oh, Baruch Hashem, Gotot Golfin, there's a mitzvah Paraduma. So if I get sprinkled and I do the right thing, so then I become Tohar, I become ritually pure. So the question is, why is it here, Dafke here in Parshas Chukas, why is it not in, let's say, Vayikra, or let's say Parshas Bo? Until now, these last few prakim are after the Meraglim, and the Jews are still in the desert. We had Parshas Shlach, Korach, Chukas. So it's been a difficult, rocky road. Ah, Paraduma. Third question is, why is it here? So I want to address these three questions in the biblical text, and then I want to go and look at some Talmudic texts. Because the same issue I am going to suggest to you is relevant not only in the case of the Torah, and that's the question about how do you bring together and understand the Torah as a book of laws and the Torah as a book. Come here, that we have seats for you. There's a sheet right behind you, so why don't you take it on the way? The Torah, there's a sheet. The Torah as a book of stories and the Torah as a book of laws, but it's also relevant to the Gemara, as we'll see shortly. So, first question is, why is HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem right here in the middle, the Jews are ready to leave Egypt? The second question is, why is Challah at the end of Parsha Shlach? And the third question is, why is Para Aduma in the beginning of Parsha Chukas? So if you look on the left side of page 3, I would like to suggest the following. Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik Zatzal, the master and teacher of so many of us, and the master and teacher of so many of our teachers, wrote an article in the 40s that is not so well known, but needs to be catapulted to prominence. It's called Sacred and Profane, Kodesh and Chol in World Perspectives. And the context here is that there is such a thing called the sanctity of space, and there is such a thing called sanctity of time. So we understand the notion of sanctity of space. We are now in a Beis HaKnesses, so we don't just hang out and do in this room what we might do in another room. There's a certain sanctity to this space. A shul, a Beis Medrash, a Beis HaKnesses has sanctity to it. There's a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. So Kal Vachomer, there's such a thing as Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, and there's such a thing as Kedushas HaMikdosh. So we're familiar with the concept of sanctity of space. And there also is such a thing called sanctity of time. And we're familiar with that as well. Shabbos, I mentioned Shabbos a moment ago. So we don't act on Shabbos like we act on Tuesday, because the time is also sanctified. So there's another, more subtle sanctity of time that he discusses, and that is the time of Sfiras HaOmer. Something is going on between Pesach and Shavuos that makes that time a unique time. It's a designated time. You know that every single day we count the Omer. We're counting from the second day of Pesach, 49 days until Shavuos. So we are inhering that time with a measure of some special character. And Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote as follows in the first full paragraph on the left side of page 3. The basic criterion which distinguishes free man from slave is the kind of relationship each has with time and its experience. What's the difference between a slave and a free person? At its core, the difference is how each one of them relates. What'd you say? A free person's time is their own. A slave's time is not their own at all. Is what?
Programmed.
Is programmed by someone else. The slave has zero bilis, zero sense of ownership over his time. The way one relates to time will determine if that person is free or that person is a slave. Freedom is identical with a rich, colorful, creative time consciousness. Bondage is identical with passive intuition and reception of an empty, formal time stream. When the Jews were delivered from the Egyptian oppression, and Moses rose to undertake the almost impossible task of metamorphosing a tribe of slaves into a nation of priests, avodim into mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh, that was the task that Moshe Rabbeinu was given to transition the Jews from being slaves to becoming a kingdom of priests. He was told by God that the path leading from the holiday of Passover to Shavuos, from initial liberation to consummate freedom, leads through the medium of time. How are you going to get from Pesach to Shavuos? If Shavuos is Matan Torah, well, we become the Am HaNivchar, and if Pesach represents the emerging, yesterday we were slaves, how are you going to get from Pesach to Shavuos? How are you going to make the transition from slavery to such an exalted state? You do it through, writes Rabbi Soloveitchik, through the medium of time. The commandment of Sfira was entrusted the Jew. The wondrous test of counting 49 successive days was put to him. These 49 days must be whole. If one day is missed, the act of numeration is invalidated. You know, if you skip counting one of the days of Sfiras HaOmer, so you continue counting, but you don't count with the bracha. You're missing something. It has to be all together. It has to be perfect. You can't miss one day. A slave who is capable of appreciating each day, of grasping its meaning and worth, after all, that is Sfiras HaOmer. Today is one day. Today is 2 days. Today is 32 days. Every day we count and acknowledge today is another day. I am designating this as another yet subsequent day. By so doing, we are indicating and demonstrating that we are now extricating ourselves from the mindset of a slave who is incapable of doing that. And now we're slowly, slowly making our way after 49 such days without missing a single one to be able to be mekabel the Torah. A slave who is capable of appreciating each day, of grasping its meaning and worth, of weaving every thread of time into a glorious fabric, quantitatively stretching over a period of 7 weeks, but qualitatively forming the warp and woof of centuries of change, such a slave is eligible for Torah. Such a slave has achieved freedom. And so therefore, I would like to suggest, perhaps, that the reason why HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem is where it is precisely for this reason. Because now what's happening? You remember the story we just read at the end of chapter 11, Makas Bechoros? We're ready to go. Next pasuk, take the seh, 10th day, 5 days from now we're leaving. What do the Jews have to be taught at that moment of transition from slavery to recipient freedom? HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Hashanah. You are the master of time. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam decides when Shabbos is. You decide when Rosh Chodesh is. You decide when Pesach is, when Yom Kippur is, when Sukkot is, when Tisha B'Av is, when Asar B'Tei, you name it, you are the master. HaChodesh HaZeh, not LaHashem, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. Rishon Hu Tzveimo Lachem in the Pasuk. Why does the Torah say twice Lachem? HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, Rishon Hu Lachem, because, get the message, it's Lachem, it's to you, you're the one who decides. And therefore it seems to me, perhaps, is my suggestion, I'm happy for you to think of other suggestions. The reason why it's here is because it fits perfectly. What better message could HaKadosh Baruch Hu give Moshe to give Bnei Yisrael at this crucial moment is for them to recognize and for them to begin to internalize that they are now, from here on in, going to be the masters of their own time. The second question is the question of challah. Why is challah at the end of Parsha Shlach? Between Parsha Shlach and Parsha Korach, the Torah tells us, Bevoachem el ha'aretz, Ishis ariso seichem. So if you look on the right-hand side, the top right of page 3, you have a sforno. You have a statement of the sforno. So I have found that the one commentator that asks this question more than any other commentator that I am familiar with on the biblical text is the Sforno. Rabbi Ovadia Sforno lived in Italy, late Middle Ages. The Sforno of all the people, thank you so much. The Sforno asks a question. Whenever I have this question, and I have it very often, so I have come to depend on the Sforno. He's my go-to Mefarish. And more often than not, the Sforno has something to say. It doesn't always cover it, and I'm not always satisfied, but he's a good place to start. So I give you that tip, should that be of interest to you. Zok Deheligus Sforno, why is Chala right here? In Perek Tezvav Pasuk Chaf, on the right-hand side of page 3, Achar Chet HaMeraglim Hitzrich Gam HaChala Leman Yihiyu Re'uyim Shetochol Bracha Bivaseihem Ke Amro Pasuk in Yecheskel Reches Arisoseichem Titnu LaKohen LaHaniach Bracha El Beisecha. After the Chet of the Meraglim, after the debacle of the Meraglim, so can imagine the upset after the Meraglim. What a crushing disappointment that was. Here they're all geared up, they're ready to go, couple of days, short period of time, we're going to Eretz Yisrael, kunz again the Meraglim, nobody has faith, it's 10 against 2, Jews are very depressed, sorry, 40 years wander in the desert. Every one of you, almost, is going to die out, with the exception of maybe a half a handful. That's a terrible thing. So they're upset. Therefore, you want to give them a little bit of a chizuk. You want them to feel that not all is lost. You want them to feel that there are ru'uyim lebracha, that they too are worthy of some kind of a blessing. And therefore, you give them the mitzvah of challah. Because the pasuk says in Yecheskel that giving challah brings bracha. So all is not lost, don't totally despair. You are still, in spite of the fact that you made a terrible mistake, you are still at your core worthy of blessing. And the way I'm going to convey that to you is by giving you this particular mitzvah. Perhaps one can take this a little bit further and say one extra addition to the Sephorno. And that is, where does the mitzvah of challah really apply? Where is challah a deoraisa? Where is challah, according to the Torah, a requirement? So the Pasuk says, so maybe that's really what the message here is. You know what, Kindeluch, it looks pretty bad now for the next 40 years. But you should know, you're going to get there. You're going to get to the Eretz. And when you get to the Eretz, I'm telling you now, something that you should file away for the time that you get there, and I'm telling it to you now because I want you to know it's going to be relevant to you. Because I don't want you to know that there's going to be a day and a time will come when you're going to go to the Eretz. So maybe Dafke after the Meraglim, when there's such a Mara Shchora, there's such a depression, there's such an upset, there's such a, they're all beaten. Hashem says, no, Bevoachem el Haaretz, there's going to be a time. I'm telling you now a mitzvah, because I want you to know and have faith that you're going to be able to get there. Third question of Paraduma. Why is Paraduma, after the story of the Meraglim and after the story of Parshas Korach? And perhaps here also there may be a similar interpretation. You know, after the story of the Meraglim, Chazal tell us that there was no communication between God and the Jewish people for 39 years. After the story of the Meraglim, God took back burner. And there is no communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. It's only at the end of the 40 years, 39 years later, when God reappears as a palpable factor in the lives of the Jewish people. And during that time, especially after seeing the presence of God so obviously in Mitzrayim, Eser Makos, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Anivalo Malach, Anivalo Sarof, Anivalo Sholiach, and then seeing Kriyas Yamsuf, you see Rabbono Shel Olam all over the place, there's a tremendous depression and a tremendous upset. And there is what we call Hester Panim. Hester Panim is an unusual experience, regretfully for us. That is that God is hidden. And we don't see, and we don't experience directly the presence of God. And so therefore maybe the Torah at that moment has to give us the mitzvah of Paraduma, because the Torah wants to teach us that at the end of the day, it's all about simple, straightforward faith. What does the mitzvah of Paraduma and Parshas Chukas teach us? It begins, Zos Chukas HaTorah. So we know that the mitzvahs are divided into there are chukim and there are mishpatim, and the mishpatim make sense and are logical and are explicable, and the chukim simply defy any explanation. So why do we do them? What's our connection dafka to the chukim? Because Rabbeinu Shalom said that that's what a mitzvah, that's what we do. It is straight, simple, unadulterated, unadorned, unsophisticated, rock solid faith in God. That's what it is. I don't understand it. I don't get it. It's a little bit strange. I can't rationalize it. It's not logical. Doesn't matter. Faith in God. And maybe that's what they needed to be taught. That now as we enter into 39 years of silence and 39 years of hiddenness, at the end of the day, Kindeluch, we're in it for the long haul. Because it doesn't have to do. And it's not dependent upon Eser Makos, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf. It doesn't have to do with that. It has to do with feeling a connection to God, even when God is not obvious, and even when that connection is predicated on behavior that, in a sense, almost even defy any logical interpretation. So I gave you three examples. First of all, the general question based on the first Rashi and Chumash. And to me, it's actually fascinating. What do you make of the fact that the Torah is this combination? It's not just a storybook, and it's not just a law code. It's a mixture. What do we make of that? And then once we start to think that way, we look at specific mitzvos. The three that we looked at was, why is HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem right here in chapter 12 in Sefer Shmos? Why is Chal at the end of Parsha Shlach? Why is Par Adum at the beginning of Parshas Chukas? And I've tried to give you some suggestions that I think enrich our appreciation of these particular mitzvahs by specifically analyzing where they are in the Torah. What I want to do now is move to the Gemara. I had here two texts about the Mishnah, because the same issue can be raised in the Mishnah, but I want to get to the Gemara. And maybe I'll take just two. So let's now go to page 7. We're going to now go straight to page 7. Me'inyana d'yoma. What's the next holiday? We just finished. We didn't say Tachnun in Shul on Friday. We didn't say Avarachamim in Shul on Shabbos because it was Shushan Purim Katan. So that means that Baruch Hashem, we have an extra month to be able to prepare for Purim and then to be able to prepare for Pesach. So the next holiday, we're now in Chodesh Adar. The next holiday is Purim. So I want to show you that this general issue about the interrelationship between law and narrative is relevant not only in the biblical text, but it's relevant also in the Talmudic text. For example, Megillah Dav Zayin Amid Beis, we're on page 7. So the Gemara here, Megillah Dav Zayin Amid Beis, where the arrow is on the left-hand side, tells us a law. Here's a law, a halacha. Amar Rava, Mechayev Inish Lebsumei Bepuria, Adelo Yoda, Beit Orer Haman, Lebaruch Mordechai. Okay, you ever hear of this before? Yeah, you heard of it. What's the halacha? What's the law? What does it say? Get drunk? Does it mean get drunk? Hold that thought. A person is obligated. What does libesume mean? I'm going to use the word imbibe. Okay? Imbibe to, an extra little epistle. Chayev inish libesume bepuria, to the extent to which you do not know anymore. And you're not really conscious, you're not crisp enough, and you're not sharp enough because you're a little bit fayushkit and fatumult and fafuchkit to know the difference between who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. You can't figure out, Orer Haman, Haman is the bad guy, he should be cursed, Baruch Mordechai, and you're trying to figure out, and you're a little bit woofy and woozy, and that chayev inish lebesume bepuria, so you have to drink a little bit extra, adalo yada, that's what ben Orer Haman, Lebaruch Mordechai. Skip a few lines. Amar Rava, next halacha. Seudas Purim. Skip 6 lines. We're going to come back to this in a moment. Amar Rava, Seudas Purim, Sheochla Balayla, Lo Yotze Yedei Chavasa. So we know that one of the mitzvahs on Purim is to have a Seuda. So when are you supposed to have a Seuda? You're supposed to have the Seuda during the day. One of the mitzvahs of Purim is Megillah. When do you read the Megillah? At night. And in the day. So you would think maybe all the mitzvahs of Purim is at night and the day, because Megillah is at night and that's like the big one. No. The Seudah of Purim, Amar Rava, if he did it at night, Lo Yotze, you have to do it during the day. Very nice. So you have a law, and you have a law, Amar Rava, Amar Rava, and in the mitten the rinnin, there's a story. There is a narrative. Let's go back. Amar Rava, and my question is, what's the story doing where it is? How do we understand the placement and the significance of this particular story in this particular place? I'm asking a similar methodological kind of a question. What is the nature of the relationship between the ruling, between the halacha, between the law, and the narrative? Amar Rava, Chazara, Mechayev Inish Lebsumei Bepuria Adelo Yoda Bein Orer Haman Lebaruch Mordechai. You're obligated to drink a little bit extra. That's how I'm going to define it for now on Purim, until you've reached the stage when you're not really able to concentrate and know who is who. Zok the Gemara tells us a story. Rabba v'Rab Zera avdu se'udas Purim b'hadei adadi. Rabba and Rab Zera, they celebrated Purim together. What happened? Ipsim. So they got a little bit tipsy. Ipsim. Kam Rabba, shachtei l'Rabbi Zera. So he got a little bit fayushkit. He gets up. What does he do? He shecht Rabbi Zera. Oh, lovely. Oh, lovely. Oh, lovely. Now, my name is Schechter, so I'm particularly sensitive to this story. It doesn't say Harag, Rabbi Zera. It doesn't, you know, he uses... Shechita is like a special way how to kill somebody. He didn't stab him. He didn't choke him. He lifted up his lifted him by the head, and his neck was hanging, and he shechted him. In a state of what would appear to be a level of inebriation. Lemachar, continues the Gemara, ba'e rachme va'achye. The next day, Rabbi says, oh my God, what did I do? Vayla freind, Reb Zera, we were just mamish, we were buddies, I invited him to my house for Suda's Purim, and now I shechted him. So what does he do? Ba'e rachme, he says to the Rebbein Shalom, yes for rachmanis. Va'achye, and he comes back to life. What an amazing thing. He returns to life. He now, Reb Zera, I'm back! It's me! We're good to go. L'shana, next year, listen to this. Amar le, Rabbi says to Reb Zera, you know what, we had such a great time last year. Nesei mar v'ne'evet zudas pur b'hadei adodi. I think we should have, you want to come over for Purim? Would you like to come over for Purim? Amar le, what does Reb Zera say? Lo b'chol shaita v'shaita misrachesh nisa. Not every year is there going to be a miracle. Miracles don't happen all the time. Last year, I'm walking around because a miracle, mamish, tchias ha-meisim. Right, you shechted me, but you have such tremendous zuchusim that you asked for rachmanis, and Rebbeinu Shlom listened to you, and now I'm back. So that's going to happen again next year. You know what? Thanks, but no thanks. Amar Rava, se'udas purim she'ochel b'lai lo yosa dechavasa. Here's my question. What is this story doing here, and what is the nature of the relationship between the law which begins this section of the Gemara? Amar Rav Achai Vinish Lebesumei Bepuria Ada Lo Yada Bein Or Raham and Lebaruch Mordechai, that we have to be a little bit tipsy, to the story that follows. Rabba Rab Zera Shechted him, asks for Rachmanis. Next year he invites him back, he says no thank you. What would you say? What's the nature of the relationship between the story and the ruling?
It's modifying the law.
It's modifying the law. Is it modifying the law, or is it?
Well, it's limiting it.
Or is it rejecting the law? The law says get drunk, and the story says, if you better not get drunk because it's dangerous. Yes.
What level of drunkenness? Yeah, exactly.
What do we mean by drunkenness? So what do you mean by modifying? Only
limiting
it to what? Chayav inish lebsume, only to a little bit.
So it's a narrow interpretation.
But not a lot. Okay, now let's turn to page 8. So there's a machlokas rishonim, how to understand the story. And this is just a test case for the nature of the relationship between the law and the story. And I want to show you how it plays itself out also in the Talmudic text. So, the riff, the top of page 8, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, a great codifier in Spain in the 10th into the 11th century. Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi codifies pretty substantial sections of the Talmud, especially those that are relevant to his religious and ritual life. And right at the top of page 8, Amar Rava Mechayv Inish Lubsumei Bepuria Adelo Yoda Bein Baruch Mordechai La'or Haman. So you see here that he codifies the two laws of Rava, and the whole mitten derinin is missing. He does glosses over it. It's not relevant. So the Ran quotes from Rabbeinu Ephraim. All the way at the end. This is Rabbeinu Nisim, 14th century Spain, writes a commentary on Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, and he quotes the arrow all the way at the bottom of the Ran, V'chosav Rabbeinu Ephraim. So we know a little bit about Rabbeinu Ephraim. We know about Rabbeinu Ephraim because we don't have a collection of statements by Rabbeinu Ephraim. Most of the time we know what the Ramban says because the Ramban put together a corpus, a chidushim of the Ramban on this, or the Ritva on this, or the Rashba on this. But we have Rabbeinu Ephraim appears many different places, and we put together from all the different places. A book came out about 35 years ago by a rabbi, Talmud Chacham in Brooklyn, by the name of Shapansky, puts out a book on the chidushim of Rabbeinu Ephraim based on culling from all of these places where we have statements in his name. The Chassav Rabbeinu Ephraim, and I'm going to read it and I'll translate it. Right, you're with me now all the way at the end of the first section on page 8. Mehahu uvda, from the story, the kam rabba v'shachte l'rabzera k'di'isa b'gemara, from this story that Rabba went and he slaughtered, mamish shechted Rabzera, the way the Gemara tells, idchi le'memra d'rava v'lo shaper dami l'mevad hachi, that the story comes to subvert the ruling. The law says, get a shtickle of junk, get a shtickle of drunk. The story says, don't get drunk, because if you get drunk, you're going to be in trouble. So, lo shaper lemevad hachi. And this Rabbeinu Ephraim is quoted in the Baal Amor, which is right below. It's quoted in the Beis Yosef. This is one bona fide perspective. What's the nature of the relationship between the law and the story? Actually, it's a machlokes. And we're not used to this. We're used to, in the Talmud, if there's a disagreement, so Amar Rabbi Gamliel Chayiv, Amar Rabbi Yoshua Potter. There's a disagreement, the language of disagreement. We don't have here a language of disagreement. We have a language of one opinion, and then the story essentially comes to disagree, but the Gemara never concludes from the story Kamash Malan, that Rava was wrong. The Gemara never uses the standard kind of argument terminology to which we are accustomed. But in fact, says Rabbeinu Ephraim, that's exactly what's going on. Rava said drunk, story says not drunk. That's the way he understands. The bottom, there's a Sefer HaEshkol, which is sort of somewhat problematic. It's not clear exactly whether it's authoritative. There's a lot of discussion around the Sefer HaEshkol, but I bring it to you for a theoretical understanding of what this text is. First, he quotes from Rabbeinu Ephraim, V'li ha-kosev nireh, we're now at the second line from the bottom, that the story comes to support the ruling. The story comes to show that the ruling, namely you should get a little bit drunk, is correct. How does the story support the ruling? Because if the story wanted to say that you should not get drunk, what should Rabbah have said to Rab Zera? Have a meal with me, and you don't have to worry because we're not going to get drunk anymore. That's done. It's not going to happen. He should have said to him, Havalei lemeimar neva tzu'uda bahadadi velonips. What was Rav Zera's reason why he's not coming? Because you're going to get drunk, you're going to kill me, maybe, and who says that a miracle is going to happen? But if you hold that you shouldn't get drunk, so Rabbi should have said to Rav Zera, come on down, it's going to be different this year, because we're not going to get drunk. Says the second opinion in the Sefer HaEshkol that there is a very close conceptual relationship between the story and the law, not the way the Rabbeinu Ephraim says it comes to reject the law, but it comes to support the law. Now, the last opinion is the opinion that you suggested. We're now on page 9, the Yad Ephraim of Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margulius. The Yad Ephraim, turn to page 9, don't worry about it, I'll translate everything. And I'll explain to you what he says. Ephraim Zalman Margulies was one of the greatest gedolim in the 19th century. He wrote many svarim, he wrote commentaries. He has a Perush Yad Ephraim. It's named for Ephraim Zalman Margulies. Yad Ephraim, it's a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, parts of the Shulchan Aruch. And he says as follows. The story comes to support the law. What does the law say? Let's read it carefully and parse it. Chayv Adam, Chayv Inish Lebesume Bepuria. What's the next word? Ad the Lo Yada. Now, Ad means until you don't know. Now, there is a rabbinic phrase that I want to suggest, and there's a whole conversation about this. When it says Ad, is it Ad the Ad Bechlal? Or Ad the Lo Ad Bechlal? In other words, is it up until and including that stage? Or is it only up till that stage? So we've been assuming all along that it's including that stage. Get drunk until your drunkenness should bring you to a state where you don't know the difference. Says Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margulies, no. What it means is, get drunk, but only up until you will reach a point where you don't know the difference, because once you don't know the difference, you have what? You've already exceeded that point. It's only till you're not going to know. Before you don't know. That's how much you should drink. And what's the proof? The proof is the story. You see what happens when you drink too much? When you drink too much, you get into trouble. So the story, according to the Yad Ephraim, is also supportive of the halacha, but now we have a different nuance. Like you said before, it limits the halacha, because it's ad. Ad means up until, but not including. Once you've reached the stage where you do not know the difference, then you've already blown it. That's already too much. And I'll prove it to you. Because Rabba and Rab Zera, he overdrank, and when you overdrink, not a good thing, you get into trouble. So what we have here is, and I bring it to you, Dafka, because we're now holding before the Yom Tov of Purim, an example of this overall question. So I'm going to summarize, and I'm going to wrap it up. The overall question is the nature of the relationship between law and narrative. The name of the article that got me started on this is the top article on the first page. It's by Professor Robert Cover. Professor Robert Cover was a professor of legal jurisprudence at Yale University for many years. Regretfully, not very many years. He died in his 40s. One of the leading jurists, theoretical jurists in the United States. He grew up in Brookline, Massachusetts. He grew up in a non-observant but traditional home. He was highly respected. He made his way as a young man in his 30s to be a professor of legal jurisprudence at Yale University Law School. He published an enormous amount. In this article that I make a reference to, he quotes from the Beis Yosef's Perish on the Tour in the Harvard University, Harvard Law Review. In the footnotes, he has long explanations and translates. The Tzoyis HaChayshin HaRangevor, the guy's a Lamdan, the guy knows, and he translates, and he puts it into the Harvard Law Review article. And when I always sort of knew, I mean, we all know that the Torah is a connection between the law and the story. I mean, that you just open it up. But it never really hit me until I read this article, when I really began to think about the implications of this. So that's the large question, and that's the first Rashi in Chumash. The kasha of Rashi is, we should have started with law. If it's a law code, answer, it's not only a law code, it's also a narrative. It's both. And then I gave you three specific examples. I suggested three specific examples. HaKadosh Hazeh Lochem, Chala, Paraduma, and I try to explain the significance of why each one is where it is and how it can help us enhance our understanding and an appreciation of them. It's also the case of Mishnah, but we skipped that. Then we went to the Gemara. I brought three examples here, but I'm only going to share with you one this evening. And that's the one that's relevant for us coming up in less than a month, with regard to the holiday of Purim. So, the law says Chayav Inish Lebesume. The Torah says, the Gemara tells a story about Rabba and Rab Zera. What is the law, or nomos? Nomos means law, narrative means story. The nomos says something. What does the narrative do to the nomos? Machlokas Rishonim. Rabbeinu Ephraim says it comes to reject it. The second interpretation of the Eshkol says it comes to support it, to say that you should get drunk, because if it meant not to get drunk, Rabbi should have said to Rav Zera, come on down, don't worry about it, we're not going to get drunk. He didn't say that. It's a raya that you're still supposed to get drunk. And Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margulius also says that the story supports the law, with a very interesting twist on understanding what the law actually is. Chayav Inish Lebesumei Bipuria only up until the Lo Yada, but not including Lo Yada. I invite you, as the Parshios unfold and proceed, to think about this issue. I think it will help us gain a greater appreciation of the Torah text as a whole, as well as certain specific mitzvos that fall within its purview. I wish all of you a wonderful evening. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them, and I could either take them publicly, I don't want to hold you up, so maybe we'll take them privately. So thank you for coming, and have a good night.